Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Chris Smith.
And my penis got numb. And I remember that my penis got numb because I started to pee in my pants. I started to go pee-pee into my pants.
That and more. But first, Portugal, Portugal, Portugal. You are going to want to take a vacation in 2025. So come do it with me. Come do it with us, your fellow Risk fans, to celebrate Risk's 15th anniversary in Portugal in May of 2025. We're going to see sights, have extraordinary food and wine, share stories with one another in no-pressure fun sorts of ways. We'll cap it all off with a big party. Risk fans are the best people. So come be with me, our business director, JC Cassis, and our friend Ryan Opaz of Catalina Tours, who put this whole experience together for us. Just go to risk-show.com/Portugal to learn more.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Looking to start a side hustle or become your own boss? Do it with Shopify. Whether you're selling succulents or stilettos, Shopify has the industry-leading tools to help you create, control, and grow your own business. So get serious about selling and get Shopify today. Sign up for a £1 per month trial period at shopify.co.uk/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.co.uk/special offer.
Now here's the show. Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison. This is a track from the Twin Peaks soundtrack behind me now, and we're calling this week's episode Lows, whether humorous or horrible. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Rory Scholl, and then later on from J. Carroll Starlit Writer. But before that, a story from Chris Smith, whose movie Sacramento is coming out next year. This story was recorded at a Risk Live show in LA all the way back in 2012. So here is Chris Smith now with a story we call That's What Underwear's For.
So who here remembers tag names? You guys remember tagging things, writing things on walls? You get paint pens and you write on backpacks and trapper keepers and all that stuff. Well, when I was in middle school, we would do this. We would tag. The way it would kind of go is that you would write your tag name. You'd come up with a tag name and you'd write your tag name on things. And then it's just like out in the world for a little while. You'd be like, tell your buddy, you'd be like, you see that name? That's me. That's like... That's my tag. And, you know, coming up with the tag name itself was an interesting process. My buddy John Doro was Fee, F-E-A, fuck them all. And his parents were divorced, so that was like, you know, it like made sense. It was like, fuck my mom and my dad, like, fuck them all. And my buddy Sean Carroll was Gems, J-E-M-Z. And Sean Carroll could do a kickflip on command, so he could basically do whatever he wanted. My tag name was Flesh. Flesh. Which I think had something to do with Freddy Krueger. It was something about like the carnal killing of Freddy Krueger and the fact that that was R-rated, and R-rated was bad. So I was like, Yep, I'm bad. Flesh. Funny part was I misspelt it. I put an A next to the E, F-L-E-A-S-H. So I was writing fleesh on things. I was writing fleesh, thinking I was writing flesh. Hard to tell which is worse. Both are really bad. Didn't get the sexual nature of it. Didn't get any of that. And that's not sort of part of my story. That is just sort of an amuse-bouche. It's sort of like a window into my character. So after I graduated college, Fleesh wanted to be an actor. I had a big meeting. Right after I graduated from college, I had a big meeting with a manager. Her name was Heather Reynolds. The industry strikes the fear of God into you for actors. It's very, very scary. And this was my first meeting, and I was really nervous. And it was in 50th Street in Manhattan, and it was like a small building. And she was on the penthouse, and she had this really, really nice sort of like Crate and Barrel office. It was really well decorated and nice. And I went in there, and I was really nervous. I had my backpack, my headshot and resume. I was like ready to make a good impression. And I went in, and I sort of said hi to the secretary. I was way early. She was like, have a seat. And I sat down, and I waited there. And I was really early. And the more I waited, the more I really get extremely nervous. And the more nervous I got, the colder I got for some reason. And the colder I got, my extremities began to get numb. My fingers got numb, my toes got numb, and my penis got numb. And I remember that my penis got numb because I started to pee in my pants. I started to go pee-pee into my pants. I'm not kidding. It was not a lot, but it was not a little. And it came out, and I knew it wasn't going to reach the pant yet, but it was like underwear. And then it occurred to me, oh, that's what underwear is for. And I went, to sort of stop the peeping. And I very instant sort of turbo Mission Impossible mode was like, this is okay. You can handle it. You're a big boy. I stood up. I went to the secretary. I knew where the bathroom was. It was right over there. But I went to the secretary because I was like, dude, she's never going to suspect it if you ask to go to the bathroom. She's not going to think that you peed your pants. So I asked her, you know, is that the bathroom? She was like, yeah, it's the bathroom. I was like, eh, all right. And I went into the bathroom, and I took off my pants really quickly. And the pee had not reached my pants yet. It was just my briefs. I took off my briefs. And I had my briefs in my hand. I was like, all right, I got to hide the evidence. The pants are okay. I can handle this commando. I can do this. And I sort of, you know, looked around. And like I said, it was sort of this Crate and Barrel, like Pier 1 Imports, like really nice office. And they had this little waste basket that was like one of those tiny wicker waste baskets that this isn't going to help me. You know, this is. I was like, I had these underwears. And I was like, oh, no, I can't put them in the garbage because there's nothing in that fucking tiny wicker garbage. Like, you put tissues in there, and then they just take the one piece of garbage and put it in the bigger garbage. It's like a novelty garbage. I needed, like, the industrial, like, Subway, nobody knows what's in there, like, gotta get rid of this evidence. So I was like, fuck. And I remembered I had my backpack. And I was like, gotta get the backpack. Wait a minute, you're holding your underwear. What are you gonna do with that? And I sort of... There was a drawer there, and I put the underwear, you know, temporarily in the drawer. You know, I mean, what am I going to do? So I put the underwear in the drawer. They were wet with my urine, and I very as casually and coolly as you can possibly do this, I went out into the lobby across from the secretary, and I grabbed my backpack, and I just sort of casually walked back into the bathroom. Because that's normal, and, you know, girls can do that. You know, I mean, I guess girls can do that because, you know, guys aren't going to ask because of, you know, we just don't talk about those things. But guys, you can't do that. There's just no way. What is it? Is it a bomb? Like, what are you doing? There's no good reason for you to be doing that. No, it's underwear. So I got back in the bathroom. I was like, all right, you got this. We're like home base here. Got it. Whew, thank God they're still there. I don't know what could have happened, but opened up my backpack, put them... sort of damp underwear into my backpack, slung it over my shoulder as casually as one can possibly go back to the lobby where they just took their backpack and sort of plopped on the couch. Yeah, whatever, no big deal. And the secretary said, Heather, we'll see you now. I went in and she goes, hey, nice to meet you. You have a headshot and resume for me? And I was like, yeah, I have it in my backpack. And unzip the backpack.
You know, like, I got this in the bag. It's in the bag. Reached in, pulled out my underwear. No, I didn't do that. That would be crazy if I did that, right? No. My headshot resume was in a binder that was, you know, gently resting next to the damp underwear. And so I just sort of casually picked it up. There's a little sheer of gloss. She doesn't know what that is. I'm fucking home free here. She's like, could be lip gloss, it could be chapstick. She doesn't. She's none the wiser. I took out my headshot and resume, and I never heard from her again. But I do have a new tag name. P, spelt with an A. Thanks a lot.
If you poop your pants or you pee your pants sometime, don't feel bad about it. If you poop your pants or pee your pants, it's no big deal. Don't be embarrassed, sometimes you're not able to be able to go to the bathroom, and you end up pooping your pants or pee your pants or something like that. It's no big deal if you poop your pants or you pee your pants sometime. It happens to everybody. It's nothing to be terribly embarrassed about. Pooping your pants is just a part of life, whether you're a little kid or you're all grown up. Don't feel bad. Don't feel bad if you poop your pants or you pee your pants sometime. If you find you're doing it like a couple times every week, you should buy yourself some diapers and then you can just go whenever you want to. Oh, oh, don't feel bad if you poop your pants or you pee your pants sometimes. Don't feel so bad about it if you poop your pants.
I remember looking down and seeing that my baby booties were dirty and tearing apart, that my diaper was ripped and falling off, and my bib was barely covering anything, and I thought, this is not a good look for a man in his late 40s. As a starving artist, I have taken every job I've been offered and mostly immediately regret it. Jobs that are long days with little pay. I've been Tony the Tiger at supermarket openings in Queens. I dressed up like a giant cup of tea for Bigelow Teas, and the costume looked more like a garbage can, so people threw trash in me all day. I was Madeline the Little French Girl for a summer. Yeah, sorry, kids. And every time, I promised myself this is the last time I'm doing these type of gigs. So when an old friend called and said he needed someone to dress up like a giant baby and pass out flyers for his friend's startup, I reluctantly said yes, but this would be the last time. I arrived at an old empty church in Brooklyn, which was our staging area. These big wooden doors opened to a large lobby, and the smell took me back to the musty halls of my elementary school. A man my age came in and asked if I was with the babies. I think so, I said, and we both moved into a room where a sign with an arrow and the word babies led us. Inside, there were many other men of all ages, races, and sizes. They were shaking hands, looking around, smiling, and I quickly found out I was not the only one they hired. In fact, I was one of 50. And the baby costume was not a foam character like Disney, it was actual diapers, booties, and a bib. And they asked us to strip down to our tidy whiteys, hold our folded civilian clothes, and get in three lines like we were in Full Metal Jacket or some other war movie. And I looked at my left and I saw this kid, Nick. He's 20, and I've been teaching his improv class for over 5 years. He saw me and said, "How exciting is this? You never know where something like this can lead." I do. It leads here, Nick. It leads right back here. So they broke us up into four groups, and they wanted us to learn the electric slide, the dance. And the song they chose was based on the app. We were promoting it, and I gotta tell you, to this day, I cannot tell you what it was called, but it had something to do with a wheel that you spun to win restaurant gift cards. And they wanted us to dance to the song Spinning Wheel. You know, what goes up must come down. And a middle-aged woman in a bright green hoodie would follow us around with a boombox, and I'm sure she brought that from home, maybe from her high school days, and she'd cue it up for us. And right away, I had men bending over in diapers inches from my face as we learned this dance. And eventually, all 50 baby men, and I found out that we were dressed this way because their slogan was Savings, Baby, and we were the Savings Babies. Yeah. Eventually, we left the church, and we walked down the street to the Barclay Center. And it was a few days after Halloween, so it was nice and crisp, beautiful outside, perfect diaper weather. And of course, as soon as we left, people started taking our pictures. Some of the guys started really getting into it, walking up to men saying, "Are you my daddy? We're lost. Wah, wah, wah." And I was so frustrated with myself for taking another one of these awful gigs. The lady with the hoodie and the boombox hits the button. We all line up. What goes up must come. But security came out really fast and asked us to leave. And one baby man started crying, you know, so we all started crying like, wah, wah, wah. They chased us across the street where the same thing happened again. And I overheard the production assistant say to the director this wasn't working, that they wanted the babies to go down to this business office park, dance down there. It was like four stops away on the subway. So they scanned us all on, and now 50 men in diapers were riding the six downtown. We get to this little business park around lunchtime, and all these lawyers and receptionists are sitting outside in this little concrete semicircle, you know, with a small makeshift garden of trees nestled in between the gray steps and tables, totally unaware of the impending toddler invasion. And I'm sure their eyes grew in horror as 50 grown men wearing pull-ups appeared, playing frisbee, wandering up to them to let them know they could save on something, whatever we were selling. And finally, our director and his crew arrived, and the green-hooded woman pressed the button, the lines were formed, and the dance began. What goes up must come. But we had only practiced in four groups, not as a team, and everyone was facing different directions. So there were like 50 man babies slamming into each other. It looked like a mosh pit at a Wiggles concert. It was chaos. And I overheard the PA again telling the director they didn't have enough money to get all the babies on the subway and back to the church. He said, that's okay, they can walk back and pass out flyers on the way. That was the last straw for me. You know, fine, I took another stupid gig, but no way was I walking in a diaper all through Brooklyn. They can humiliate themselves all they want. I am out of here. So I broke from the pack. And the only thing they gave us was one of those tiny sling backpacks with their wallets in it. So I went down to the subway, mumbly and griping. You know, how dare they? How can they do this to us? I swiped in. I'm never again, Rory. You're never taking a job like this again. I'm so mad. How dare they treat us this way? And it wasn't until I was on the platform waiting for the subway that I realized 50 baby men together? Strong. One baby man by himself is a target. And people noticed. They asked if I wanted my bottom spanked or if I needed a bottle. Pictures were taken. A very tall, skinny guy in a trench coat and more earrings than a Claire's outlet wanted to know if I needed my nappy changed. You know, I got on the subway and people asked where my parents were. And to make things worse, I'd gotten on the wrong side, which meant now I was going deeper into Brooklyn in the wrong direction. Eventually, I crossed over to the correct train, but I had to think quick. You know, I pretended I was doing some viral marketing, which I was supposed to do, I guess. Standing up and saying things like, there's a load of savings in my diaper. Go to pampers.com, and pointing to invisible cameras and asking people to wave and things. Finally, I got to my stop, and I run up the stairs. Not out of the woods yet, though. There was a fire truck with a group of firemen that were honking their horns at me and slowly following me down the street. I was chased by a group of teenagers into a nearby McDonald's and hid there for a while. Eventually, I left, and, you know, I'd gone so far out of the way that I'd caught up to the parade of man babies heading back to the church. So I got in line so I could get paid. And at my turn, the woman behind the table gave me my fee, $75. Yeah. I swore then and there this was my last time doing this. I was going to demand better of myself and stop taking these shit gigs. So the woman said they liked me and they had another event next week they'd love me to do. I smiled. I laughed. I put the $75 in my diaper and shook my head and said, see you next week.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Jenny Slate, and Dev Patel. In recent weeks, I sat with actor / Veep Julia Louis-Dreyfus and director Richard Linklater. You can listen to Talk Easy on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open up your free iHeart app today, search Talk Easy, and start listening.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What goes up must come down. Spinning wheels.
Risk. This is Leonid and Friends, a Chicago tribute band from Moscow, doing a song by Blood, Sweat, and Tears. So technically, they should probably call themselves a bands from the 70s that used a lot of brass instruments tribute band. We just heard from Rory Scholl, who you can see as Santa Claus this holiday season on tour buses all over New York City. And you can find him on TikTok at Tuesdays with Rory. And before that, a little ditty by the name It's Okay If You Poop / Pee Your Pants Sometimes, period. Don't Feel Bad, period. By Papa Rossi and the Photogs. You know, I'll probably be recording a new check-in soon for Patreon because the second half of this year has been so disorienting, discombobulating, disconcerting for these nuts. This is the last Risk episode that I'll be recording from my Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn apartment. By far, my favorite place I've lived in my 36 years in New York. Now the place is just piled high with boxes and one kind of worried and bewildered cat. But there's always those check-ins, those bonus stories, and other surprises for our members at patreon.com/risk. We're so grateful for our members. Without you guys, we truly could not keep the show going. So join us if you're not there. It's all at patreon.com/risk. Next, we're going to hear from J. Carroll Starlit Writer, who has published so much. Her book, Strange Science, is hugely popular. And her story, The Captive Audience Magic Show, was adapted into an award-winning short film. Now, a heads up, the subject of attempted suicide comes up in this story. So, here's J. Carroll Starlit Writer with a story we call Miracles and Coincidences.
Dropped off my work project just in the nick of time. While I was on my way from San Diego to Phoenix for my Christmas vacation. And as soon as this project left my hands, extreme relief and extreme exhaustion set in. But I was determined not to let anything stop me from taking this trip. My grandpa had Alzheimer's, and my grandma now had dementia. I knew that every holiday that we spent together could be our last. And so despite my exhaustion, I turned the ignition and started to drive. So I got on the 8 freeway, like right into holiday traffic. As I slowed down, I started thinking about this 6-week-long downward spiral that I had been on. My boyfriend of several years and I had just broken up. Despite our mutual love for parties and cats, it just wasn't right for us. And I had a health crisis when I did not have insurance. At the same time, I had procrastinated this work project that was due by Christmas. And I just felt doomed. If I had believed in God, now would have been the time to pray. But I had been raised without religion. And I've always considered myself an atheist. What I did instead was just throw myself into work violently. For 2 weeks, I had worked 80 hours a week. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. I was drinking pots of coffee and refusing to feel all of these feelings from these crises that were unfolding around me. So I got in the car and the traffic had just started to get moving. Ahead, I saw high wind warning. I was feeling really woozy, but I just chugged some coffee and powered ahead. I felt my head snap up and I realized I had fallen asleep. Instinctively, I checked the rearview mirror and I saw all these loose Christmas presents. There were hardback books for my mom and grandma, glass bottles, boots, a big fancy butcher knife for my sister. Even more than usual, I had stressed myself out trying to find time to buy gifts. I hadn't even wrapped them. I'd have to do that at my mom and dad's house. I was feeling this anxiety, which was weird because I thought I'd feel relieved after dropping off the project, but like the grief was still coming up. I didn't know what to expect from my grandparents, what their state would be. I just ignored my feelings and powered ahead. I turned up the music. I stayed in the fast lane. My head snapped up again. I had fallen asleep again. And in my misery, I made this life-changing decision. I just didn't care what happened to me. So I didn't pull over. I kept going. Next thing I knew, I regained consciousness. I had drifted off the side of the freeway. And instead of gently slowing down and turning with the skid, I failed driver's instructors everywhere. I slammed the brakes and I yanked the wheel. I overcorrected at 85 miles per hour and my car started to skid in a circle. As it hit 90 degrees to the right, that's when I realized my car was going to crash. I could not recover from this. I continued to spin around, now 180 degrees, facing all of that traffic. I made eye contact with the driver behind me, and I'll never forget his shocked expression. His eyes widened, his jaw dropped, and I was horrified. Not about what might happen to me, but him. He was about to plow into me and all those cars behind him. Injuries and deaths would ensue in this pileup. It was all my fault. As my car hit 181 degrees, I realized these were actual people families headed on holiday vacation, and here I was, some depressed jerk about to kill them, or at the very least, make them watch me die. And then my car spun around to 200 degrees, and that's when it caught air and started to flip through the air and roll off of the freeway. And that was coincidence number one. My car rolled away from the freeway and all that traffic, and it hit the ground and flew up a second time. I closed my eyes to protect them from all this flying glass. And by that second roll, I knew that I could not stop this. And it was weirdly freeing. It was like the most peaceful feeling I'd ever felt, to not have to be in control of anything. As my car hit the ground again and bounced again, I sensed this presence. It was filling my car with warmth and with light. Even with my eyes closed, like, I could sense this light, and I felt safe. Like on roller coasters I've been riding since I was barely tall enough. And so my car hit and rolled. I was conscious of all five rolls until finally I landed upside down, hanging from my seatbelt. Someone ran over to my open, broken window, and all I could say was, "Fuck." He said, "We're EMTs, it's okay." And I said, "Fuck." And then I said, "Wait, how'd you get here so fast?" And that was coincidence number two. A car full of off-duty paramedics had seen it all happen. And they pulled me out through my window because my car was smoking and they were afraid it might explode. And as we waited for the fire trucks, I surveyed all the heavy things that had been in my car, and they were all across this huge dirt field. There was my 80-pound suitcase that had been in the back seat. There were all those inexplicably dangerous Christmas presents, like glass and knives. My glasses, my phone, my GPS had all flown out through the broken windows, were in the bushes. There had been a full metal water bottle that was now all dented up. Rolls of coins, shoes, it was all outside in the field. And coincidence number three, none of these things hit or hurt me. In fact, I didn't have a bruise or even a scratch. So now paramedics came, fire trucks came, a sheriff and a tow truck driver. Each person, when they arrived, asked, "Where's the driver?" Meaning, "Where's the body?" And each was astonished when I would wave. I heard them telling stories about me, like I was some celebrity who showed up at your party. They were taking pictures of this trashed site and my destroyed car with the bumper 30 feet away. But they weren't taking pictures for evidence. They were taking it for Facebook, I guess. Coincidence number four was that no other cars were involved in the crash, despite how many cars had been on the freeway. While we waited for the tow truck to flip my car back over, the grizzled old cop told me how lucky I was. And later, the tow truck driver said, "Wow, Sheriff's sure in a good mood. He don't see accidents like that where people live. You made his day." which made me laugh. But I also shook my head sadly because I knew this wasn't really an accident. The next day, despite my family's protests, I rented a car and drove to Phoenix. I gave them all their beat-up, unwrapped Christmas presents that I was able to find. Some of them were just lost in the dirt forever. Of course, they didn't care about that. They hugged me extra hard and didn't want to let go. And they could see that I didn't look well. One night, my sister reached over and plucked one of my hairs. "It's just a gray hair," she said. Well, she didn't know. I had never had a gray hair. And I just started bawling. I couldn't stop crying. I cried that I was getting old, but instead of maturing, I was regressing and going on work benders. And due to said bender, had wrecked a paid off sports car with a 6-disc Bose system. And then I cried about how dumb it was that I was crying over a car when I almost died and or killed people. I thought of my cat who would have been abandoned and the stuff that people would have had to go through in my home, like the bestiality souvenir that I bought in Bali by accident. But I wouldn't have been there to explain that. And all the while, my sister, who's a scientist who rarely shows emotion, she put her arms around me while I cried. For the first time, I was tough, and so was she. But as I felt her bear hugging me from behind, I finally felt comfort. Everything I couldn't feel before came rushing out. I just sobbed. Maybe if I'd let myself cry before, if I'd let myself be human, I wouldn't have gotten to that point. In cutting myself off from my fears and my grief and my despair, I had also cut myself off from joy and hope. I had been willing to do all this just to avoid feeling. And I finally accepted I had done this to try to kill myself, but without having to take responsibility for it. And that came with a sense of relief. I don't have to act unconsciously ever again. And those things I was stressed out over, the relationship was all wrong for me. The work, I'm better about scheduling and I'm motivated to avoid another crisis. And importantly, that presence I had felt in the car, I don't need to know what it was. And God forbid I become one of those people who won't shut up about the Almighty. But I'm no longer an atheist, because all those little coincidences that added up to this big miracle of me surviving this unconscious suicide attempt, it felt like something more was at work. A few weeks ago, now it's a decade later, I found myself asking, "Hey, do we want to talk about our feelings?" And my 7-year-old daughter said, "Yeah, when we drove over something and got a flat tire, it was loud. My heart jumped. That was scary." She knows it's okay to cry and to show emotions, even scary ones, like the ones she was having, like anxiety and hopelessness. At the same time that I meet with my counselor, she meets with hers. And to be clear, feeling my feelings, the negative ones, sucks sometimes. But it's so much better than the alternative. I tell my daughter, yeah, sometimes my heart jumps too. It jumps out of fear. Sometimes it jumps out of anger. But mostly, it jumps for joy.
If I hadn't made a left-hand turn, if you hadn't made a right, if I'd waited just a moment more, if you'd missed the light, if that car had never blown its horn, if that friend had stopped to talk, we'd have never met at all. If I didn't take that walk, I'd have gotten there too early. You'd have gotten there too late. We are children of coincidence, coincidence and fate. Crossed connections, lost connections, empty corners, crowded intersections.
This is Risk. This is Dori Previn behind me now, and we just heard from J. Carroll Starlit Writer, who you can find on Instagram at Starlit Writer. Folks, guess what this podcast will be on October 6th? 15 years old. What can you do to celebrate? Do whatever you can to get out the vote for the election in November. There's phone banking, text banking, door-to-door canvassing. There's posting on social media. There's ways to volunteer for stuff like riding people to the polls. There's voteforward.org. That's sending letters through the mail. You write a super short personalized note to a potential voter, and you can draw a little smiley face or something like that. People enjoy that. That's voteforward.org. And our friends at Gaslit Nation have an action guide at gaslitnationpod.com that you can check out for even more ideas. So help get out the vote. Meanwhile, on Wednesday's episode of Risk, Jamie Brickhouse answers the age-old question, who's your gay daddy? But that's Wednesday, folks, and today's the day. Take a risk.
If the planets were in perfect place, if your sign was on the rise, if my stars were in complete accord, the sun was in your eyes, you'd have only seen my shadow as I passed you on the street, and it might have been 100 years before our souls would meet again, and we would still be strangers.